The following episode of FOFOP is classified MA. It contains some coarse language, some nudity, drug references, a sex scene, time travel, terrible Batman impersonations, a Charlie Clausen pronounced Clausen-shaped hole, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that the program is not suitable for persons under the age of 15, and minors must be accompanied by an adult guardian or priest. This is John Deake speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. My name is Will Anderson and joining me, guest Charlie number one. This is FOFOP 300. This is DOFOP 70-something, I think. Please welcome back to the podcast, Dave Anthony. Hello, Dave.
Hello. Should we tell everybody happened? That was...
Go. Let's just go with it because it is currently 150. It just clicked over to 150 where I am and... We were going to do this podcast at one, and yes. I really wish I'd been rolling tape on what just happened for the last 50 minutes because it would be an inspiration to anyone getting into the world of podcasting and thinking, you know what, I'm finding some of this a little tricky. Like, it seems like it should be really easy to do, but imagine if there was two guys who between them had probably made 1,000 podcasts who took 50 minutes to try to get the fucking audio working at the start of their podcast. That would have been the only episode that was more depressing than the episode we did about climate change that we never released.
Hey, but we were right about that. Oh my God, was amazing. That really was 50 minutes. Wow. Okay.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to say about being right. It was funny, between when we spoke last time and when we've spoken this time, there was a guy on Twitter that we both saw who was getting mad at the fact that we talk about your ability to predict the future on these podcasts. And he said, you know, he was, and I was like, well, mate, I'm sorry that I have to actually say this on the internet, but you know, it's a bit like it's true, but it's also a comedy podcast and it's kind of like a comedy bit. However, I was reminded this week by a long-time listener to your contributions to the world of podcasting, that it was first on a little podcast called Walking the Room that they were introduced to the idea that Bill Cosby was no good and that Ellen DeGeneres might not be the nice person that everyone thought she was.
God, I'm so glad that Ellen DeGeneres finally got taken down. Oh. Yeah, I mean, we told the truth on Walking the Room. It was almost like it was two guys who didn't see a future in show business and were just saying whatever they wanted.
How are you? Obviously, this is a very exciting day for you because Joe Biden has gone from being the presumptive Democratic nominee for presidency to being the assumptive Democratic nominee for the presidency. So I assume I've interrupted you today from some sort of celebratory Biden Harris 2020 party that you were throwing?
Yeah, we started drinking at noon. It's weird to see your dreams come true. You know, it's just never happened before. So it's so exciting to see such a great mind, such a sharp, great mind with, I would say, an incredible moral code. It's just great to see that person finally become president.
Well, I mean,
he's going to lose, but yeah.
Like somebody who has... You know, while 170,000 Americans have been dying, has been there on the front lines every day in whatever capacity that he could offer. You know, whether it be rebutting the lies and misinformation of the president or lending a hand in districts that need their actual help during this terrible time where you could actually lock in voters for the next election. It's been nothing but a nonstop onslaught of the power of Joe Biden. You must agree.
It really has. It's been really amazing. The guy's a forced unto himself. He's just a whirlwind of hope and you know, to see him going out there and getting people's hopes up and you know, just saying we can do this. It's really amazing to see.
I mean, I think Obama's the one who's really suffering because I mean, in terms of rhetorical flourish and, you know, the capacity to get together a groundswell of people on the street working on his behalf. It's just been unparalleled. Like, you know, this is... it really has felt like this entire time, the first Star Wars movie should have just been Luke Skywalker just hiding somewhere while Darth was doing all that shit. Just like, I'm just going to keep quiet. I'm going to let Darth Vader hang himself. That's what I'm going to do. Give him enough rope.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. That's the game plan. But then at some point, I think they realized, oh, wait. He just eats the rope. Like, it's not actually a thing that hurts him.
I mean, it really has been. And again, like, you know, anyone's better than Trump, in my opinion. Dave might have some different opinions. But
no, I agree with you.
Stunning to me that I can get up every day and watch a 5-minute rant about the bad job that Donald Trump's doing, where someone completely dissects him in the most aggressive and on behalf of other people, you know, way, and that is Michael Rappaport, and yet I hear nothing from Joe Biden. That feels to me like right now, if I was an American voter, I would be on the Rappaport 2020 ticket before the Biden 2020.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Democrats, and you know, a lot of us think it was cheating, but the Democrats all coalesced around a guy who just doesn't have it and wasn't in the primaries, wasn't doing the job. And so he's doing the same thing he did in the primaries, which is essentially nothing. So, like, it's hard. It's insane to watch. Like if you can't at this point push Medicare for all, even if you're, let's just say you want to get elected and you lie, if you can't do that, it's insane how bad at politics you are. Just fucking lie. Because 90% of Democrats are for Medicare for all. So just fucking lie and then you'll win.
Also, there's never been a time where that's a better message to put out there. If you're going to lie,
ever,
this is the perfect time to, like, we're going to have some sort of, we're going to look after everybody in Social Security. We're going to raise the basic wage. We're going to give Medicare for all. The only way we can get out of our current crisis that's facing this country is that we're going to look after you. The other mob are going to be like, nah, it's everyone to themselves. The purge starts in 12 months. Like, we're going to go the opposite direction. And maybe if you just get some of that stuff, that's still a victory. You still win. And plus, you haven't.
Yeah.
I mean, you're lying about the other stuff as well. It's not like anyone's like, oh, yeah, they're telling us 100% the truth about what they are going to do regardless. So at least make them good lies.
Yeah. I mean, the lies are just like, they're just like, they say shit and everyone's like, well, he's lying. But, you know, he went really forward with his environmental stuff. And everyone's like, yeah, but he's lying. But at least he's saying it. And he got the groups on board, the important environmental groups, Sunrise Movement and all these other ones. They're like, okay, well, if that's what he's going to do, that's what he's going to do. So just fucking lie across the board. I just watch it and I'm like, how do you think you get elected by just saying, we might give you some stuff. I don't know. Not that much. But the other guy's really bad. Like, it's just, it's crazy, I mean, to watch.
To the Democrats, like, literally, if you are going to make up an imaginary girlfriend in Canada, at least make a hot. Do you know what I mean? You're making her up anyway.
Hey, what's your girlfriend like in Canada? Frumpy. She's got a bad attitude.
Hates me.
You know, she hates me. She's got one good eye, and it just stares. It's like a mean good eye.
I'm not really talking about her bad eye. Her bad eye is fine, but her good eye is so good that it's off-putting.
Yeah, it's I'm just watching it every day, and I'm just I'm mystified at how bad they are at politics, because I think they're truly worse than if you just put a random person in the job.
I mean, I think that you're right. It feels to me like random people seem so much more engaged in it. I mean, the idea that you're even waiting until the first Tuesday in November to start leading the country, this is the perfect time in a crisis like this, when your country and the world faces a crisis unlike any other in our lifetime, where actual leaders, people who want to lead, realize this is the moment that you have to step up. You, like, Joe Biden should have been being the American president since April. Like, if he wants the job in November, yeah, he should have taken it in April.
That's right. And I can't, like, you can't have a, FDR is considered one of our greatest presidents. He changed the country forever because he did this, you know, very leftist, a lot of socialist elements, passed all this stuff. And then the Democrats ruled the government for fucking decades. Like, they just own Congress. And it's amazing to see, like, if the Democrats just pushed as hard as they could and went healthcare, Green New Deal, went all the stuff that people are really for, they would own this country for decades. They would have control of both the Congress, both chambers in Congress. You know, presidency might go back and forth, but they would have the Congress. So it's just, you're just watching them throw it all away so they can take a little bit of money from terrible corporations. And Bernie already showed them that you don't need to take money from corporations. People will give it to you if you have the right policies. Like, Bernie was making more money than they were taking from corporations. This isn't fucking hard to do. It's really bewildering to watch. Like, they're just dumb people.
I mean, what better time will you ever have in the history of American politics to argue for universal health care when so many people are losing their jobs and the health care that they might have had under their jobs? Like, you didn't make the country have this many unemployed people. The world circumstances and then the bad leadership made the country have this many out of work people. But it's the perfect time to make the argument, because suddenly you have 30 million extra people who are suddenly like, oh, you know what? I do need some sort of safety net. I can't rely on my employer to provide this for me.
Yeah. And on top of that, like, I assume they think everything's going to be the same after the pandemic, but it's you're just creating millions of socialists overnight. Like, there's 30 million people whatever they were before, they're different now. And so whatever they think is going to happen, like, it's going to go back to, you know, everyone supporting you because you have the same policies as Obama, that's gone. Those days are gone. Like, it's a different world from here on out. So I don't know what they're doing. It's really fucking crazy to watch.
So I'm sure we'll get back into the state of America, but I thought let's not start with just America being the place that we need to point the finger at. I've got a little article here that has just emerged on the Australian Press.
Oh.
Hot off the presses, Dave. And I thought it might just give you a little insight into what's going on in my little corner of the world. So it turns out that Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister of Australia, got some headlines today because he has announced that he'll give free COVID-19 shots for all Australians. Now, I got to be honest, Dave, as an Australian, didn't think that was a controversial position. I actually assumed we all would get free vaccines for the COVID virus. It wasn't. If he'd gone the other way, that probably would have made the headlines in Australia. I know that's probably more of a lottery in America, but I expected we'd all get them. But it turns out not everybody wants them, Dave, because this announcement was only made this morning. Oh. And the comments under the article will give you a little indication of some of the fine thinking that's happening in the land down under. So I'm just going to read through some of the comments under this article. You know where you can stick that vaccine, ScoMo? Give it to your squad, but don't you dare come near me or my family with that poison. Okay. Not alone, though, that person. Death shots. Here we come. Line up, team death sheep. Shots. Can't wait.
I love how it's this is just pure crazy Americanism, but through the Australian language filter, which is brief, biting little comments and nicknames.
Is this the one from Dr. Bill Gates that believes in lowering the world's population by use of vaccines significantly to help with climate change? One reader asked.
Well, this is exciting.
Here's another one. The Grim Reaper's in the house. Bill Gates must be rubbing his hands with all the billions of dollars you'll make.
What the fuck? Where do they come up with this shit? It's just...
Not the only one.
Like,
who thinks...
I'm not a huge fan of Bill Gates, but man, they're just insane.
I did hear Bill Gates being interviewed recently, and he was just like, man, like, you try your best. Like, I know some people had some trouble with the way that I made my money, but to be fair, I'm using a lot of it now to try to help underprivileged people and come up with vaccines and, you know, cure these diseases. And I tried to give people a warning a few years ago about what might happen, and now it's all my fault. You're like,
I know. He was like, well, here's something that might happen as a pandemic. So I'm actually going to set up ahead of time functioning places that can create a vaccine fast. And everyone's like, you hold on right there. You fucking hold on right there. I finally found something about you, Mr. Gates, that I don't like.
It's also one of those things that it is just what it must have been like in witch burning time. Like, you know that so much of witch burning was somebody going, hey, I think there's, you know, we had a fire at this time last year and we had a fire at this time the year before. Maybe we should prepare for a fire that's coming up in 3 weeks. And then a fire comes through and they're like, burn the witch in the fire.
No, I saw a pattern.
Okay. Here we go. Considering Bill Gates is a eugenicist and this fraudulent orchestrated pandemic is all about the UN's Agenda 21 and depopulation, I think I'll pass.
What the fuck? There's just so many things like mixed in that it's like they seem like to them they're saying something very matter of fact, but to everyone else you're like, wait, what depopulation? What's going on?
I like this one. Don't order too many. Most people don't need a vaccine for something that has a 99.96% recovery rate, and hydroxychloroquine is a safer alternative.
How did that get over there? Like, they're listening to Trump in Australia?
There is a certain, and it's the QAnon thing, right? Like, it is that underground, like, the government is a conspiracy against you, which is true, right? But it's not the conspiracy that they're making up. All the conspiracy that is against us is hiding in plain sight. You need to look at what is happening in society, but it's not about Bill Gates trying to create a pandemic to put a fucking 5G chip in you. That's not like, but I understand that it probably comes from people who have a suspicion about the way the world is operating, and then they find comfort in that it's all some grand conspiracy. So how about this one? The mark of the beast is here. That's why it's free.
Oh, fuck, man. It's
And last but not least, leave my body alone, Bill Gates. I don't want your 5G tracking inside me.
I had to block an old friend, a guy I started comedy with, and then he quit comedy, but we had stayed in touch. I had to block him on Twitter and Instagram because he just started with the 5G stuff, and I kept saying, don't do this, I'm not interested. And then he just like started following me around the internet, and I was like, stop it, what's going on? But he's just like, it's all 5G, it's not real. And I'm just like, okay, all right, I don't know what to do except to just, you're gone.
I live in a part of the world now where these sort of ideas are quite prevalent. And it is probably...
I've heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a former celebrity chef in Australia by the name of Pete Evans. And he's become quite a divisive figure in this country because he started as a chef and then he was like a TV chef, like a cooking show chef. And then he has graduated to having a lot of ideas in the sort of natural medicine world and very big on the American conspiracies and these sort of things. And so he's moving out of Sydney because people are too narrow-minded and he's moving up towards where I live. And I'm just like, yeah, I can see that. There's a lot of that around here. There's a lot of conversation. I've been at like group gatherings and parties and things where I've had to just back my way out of a conversation because I don't want to... Fine. You can believe whatever you want to believe. I was behind some people at the Japanese restaurant the other night and I was, you know, 1.5 meters away but close enough to hear the conversation they were having quite loudly, and they were talking about the idea that the temperature, you know, gun that they use to see, you know, do you have that? Is that a thing that they're doing over there, temperature testing people before they go into things? So they were saying that that is a mind erasure gun. And her kid the kid was traumatized because somebody had pointed a mind erasure gun at him and now he couldn't remember where things were. True story.
I just... But every time you hear one of these, you're like, okay, why? Why do you think they're doing that? What's the game plan? They just want to erase people's minds to what?
To what end?
What's the end game? Like, what's the purpose? It's the same thing where they keep saying, like, you know, doctors are faking COVID, and you're like, why are they doing that?
Just why?
What's the point of a doctor doing that? What? Jesus Christ, a fucking mind eraser gun? Like, they can literally take anything that's helpful and be like, okay, I gotta, Band-Aids? They're actually little murder stick-ons. So they slowly kill you. You put it on, and it injects poison into your body. And if you wear a Band-Aid for 2 days, forget about it.
Well, you'll find that bleeding is like your body's way of naturally expelling pollutants. And so if you trap those pollutants in the body when they're trying to be, like, I mean, naturally expelled, then you're really poisoning yourself from the inside.
That's right. That's why you should just let it bleed.
Let it bleed.
I mean, that's what my... So I have a doctor that I see. I kind of see her. She just I just watch her on YouTube, but that's one of her things. But I consider her my doctor. I mean, I talk to her through the comments, but she's my doctor.
I mean, close enough, I say. And what a great medical opinion. Let it bleed. You know what? Sometimes you just got to let it bleed.
Yeah. I mean, the Rolling Stones didn't come up with that for no reason. I mean... No, they knew what they were talking about.
Well, I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but all members of the Rolling Stones are doctors, medical doctors. That's where they met.
That's right.
The Rolling Stones.
That's right.
At medical school.
At medical school. That's right.
Yeah, rock and roll music's gain was, pharmacy's loss. It was the great thing they said about the Rolling Stones. Oh.
That's right. We lost five of the greatest doctors who could be practicing, but still, they tell us what to do through their music. Let it bleed. And paint it black. That's the other one.
That's right. The two major bits of advice. Let it bleed. And if that does not work, paint it black.
That's right.
So how are you? How is
life?
I'm sorry.
I just noticed that your books are color stacked by color.
Yeah, they are. Absolutely, they are. It's quite a talking point.
Did you do that?
I did it, but under instruction.
How high? How high? Okay. Because that looks like something you'd be really high.
Really high to do, or they're stacked really high?
You'd have to get really high to do. You'd be really high.
I mean, to be honest, in a quarantine lockdown where I have no job, there is no job that doesn't qualify under that. I bet I'd be better at this if I was really high. So, podcasting included. So, I have become, because, you know, I'm not in the same room as anybody, when I'm podcasting at the moment, I really have... You know, just become one of those people that, like, like Dave Allen back in the day, you know, hosts his TV show while smoking the entire time. And so I've got into the habit where I just, like, it's fine for FOFOP or TOFOP or whatever, but, like, now I'm doing philosophy episodes where I'm just, like, you know, sitting here in my pajamas drinking a beer and, like, smoking. And it's just, like, I've really, like, I quite like it. I'm fine with it. But... I interviewed the Prime Minister, the former Prime Minister of Australia, Julia Gillard, on philosophy, and I did not have the guts to smoke while I was interviewing her. That was my... I was like, nah, that's
really
disrespectful.
Oh, my God. No, you should have. You should have just been completely naked, waist down.
So here's what I was going to say about the bookshelves is that they are color-coded because Amy suggested they should be color-coded. And so so I color-coded them, and I've loved it. It's revolutionized.
No, it's great.
How, like, because it's a bit of a controversial one, like color coding, because people will go by author or by subject or whatever. But I always find there's too many confusing subcategories. When there's a confusing subcategory in colors, like there might be a transitional color between red and orange or whatever, you could just ease from the red into the orange with some of the in-between transitional colors. It's a really good system. And also, I'm just randomly reading some different books because I'll just like be like, feeling a bit blue. I need a blue book. I'm just going to go and look in the blue section.
I will say it's interesting how many red books there are. And I guess that makes sense because they want it to draw your attention on the shelf. But there's definitely a lot of green.
It stands out.
Not a lot of green.
I know. I mean, the black and white books are over the other side. You can't actually see them. So black and white are on the same shelf, and then the colored books are on a different shelf.
Well, it looks like there's a rainbow behind you, so that's nice.
And they're not technically stacked. There's a book. There's like a bookshelf that makes them appear like they're all stacked on each other, but you actually load it into a bookshelf.
Yeah, it's nice.
Thanks, man.
She knows what she's doing.
Yeah, she really does. Tell me about your life. What's going on? How are you? What's been going on?
Well, I've just, I'm the same as you with no more touring and, obviously it's a little more complicated with me because I think you guys have, a possible time when things will get better.
What's your attitude to that? I'm interested in what, I had some shows still on sale for the rest of the year, but I think like even though some of them haven't been officially cancelled yet, I can't see any of them happening. And there's talk around the festivals early next year certainly being not going ahead in their traditional format. It would be at least the very best we can hope for is there's some sort of modified, format where they can do it in a controlled way. But like the ethics of, if you're doing a dollop show or if I'm doing one of my stand-up shows where you're trying to invite, somewhere around, 500 to 1,500 people into a space. And what's your, regardless of what the sort of laws and permissions and what you can get away with. I mean, there's stand-ups back doing stand-up now in some comedy clubs in some places. So, like, you could do stuff now, but what's your sort of, what do you think about your responsibility and when you should do it and all those sort of things?
Yeah, I don't think we should do it until there's a cure or at least a cocktail or medicine of some kind that can, save lives and stop the long-term effects. I don't want to put on a show and then be the guy where there was a super spreader there and, 80 people come down with it and 3 die and, 50 have long-term problems. Like I have no, it's just not worth it. Like I'd rather go on unemployment or whatever else I can do than cost someone their life. Like and again, we have tons of comedians that just go out and do stand up and they just don't care. And they're just like, well, everyone's making their choice. The audience is making their choice and we're making my, and I just can't live like that. Like that's not my,
I mean, I guess there is, I can understand the argument. Like nobody needs to go to a comedy show, right? Like if you put it on and people decide I'm fine with this, I'm going to go out to a comedy show, then yes, there's a level of personal responsibility there. But I just think from my point of view, I'm like, yeah, but you gave them some permission to come by putting it on. Like by the fact that you said it's okay for you to come to this thing. And how do you promote a show where like the whole time you're like, hey, look, I don't know if this is a good idea. You've got to make up your own mind. Come, don't come. I'm not really sure. And then when no one comes, is that because your audience are just super smart and realize it's not a good thing? Or
we just canceled our last tour, but we were always going to cancel. We were just kind of waiting to see if like there was some sort of miracle, but it was just like there's no fucking way it was going to happen. But people were still buying tickets, and I was like, what is going on out there? Like, how are people still buying tickets? Like, it seems pretty obvious. This isn't going to happen. I guess there's an element of
people saying, like, we want to support you as well. Like, we know this is a hard time for you guys. So if this does happen, we want you to know that it's going to be full of people. But at the same time, it's like, if somebody came to me the week of it, because you don't know until the day before, right? Or the day. Or, you know, it's one of those things, you can be safe for these 6 months and have no outbreaks where you are for the 6 months. You know, if I could do a show around this area, there's been no COVID cases in this area pretty much for the entire time that it's been happening. The likelihood that if I did a show here and a whole bunch of people came to that show, they could sit in each other's laps, and the immense likelihood would be that, you know, none of them would, you know, catch the disease. It would be absolutely no risk. And yet at the same time, there's also some element of going, but if you start doing those things, does that not give everyone that sort of idea that there is no risk anymore? Because all it takes is one random person who's sick to come into the area. And then if everyone's behaving like the old days, then it just spreads like wildfire.
Yeah. If everyone's not taking it seriously. I mean, that's the weird thing about these. You watch it happening everywhere, where people just let their guard down and then it just takes off. And I mean, that's essentially what America's doing. But it's definitely a weird sort of psychological thing that's happening. And I don't know, like, you know, New Zealand, I mean, they're having a flare up again. And I think everyone's going to have flare ups, and they'll conquer it again because they seem like they know what they're doing. But you know, at one point they had like a concert. It was like, I just saw a video of it online. It was like 6,000 people. And I was like, yeah, if you get it off your area, if you wipe it out of your area, then you can live a relatively normal life. And then once it comes back, then you shut everything down again and you start over. Like, it's a really simple thing to do. It's going to hurt the economy, but the economy is worse if everyone has COVID. Like, it's... You know, a lot. As we're learning in America, it's actually worse for the economy if everybody has it.
Well, also, the idea that you have to constantly shut down is bad for things. So we have to prevent as much as possible having to constantly shut down. It makes sense, right? Like, I mean, here at the football, they've had 30,000 people in Western Australia because Western Australia hasn't had any cases. The borders are shut. It's a controlled environment. And they, you know, they can have 30,000 people in a 60,000 seat stadium and they feel like that's a pretty safe thing to do. And it is until it isn't.
That's right. It is until it isn't. And then that comes back to the stand-up thing. Like, do you want to be the act who had the show that everyone says for the next 6 months? Well, it started at the Dollop show.
I mean, it's a hook. I bet you'd have a whole lot of people downloading the podcast, you know?
Yeah,
like, it wouldn't necessarily be a career ender.
No, our numbers would go up through the roof.
I mean, you could spin it. Like, this is how keen people were to see this show. They were willing to risk death. Some of them suffered it. And you know what their family said? They died doing what they loved. Being in the audience of something they could listen to for free on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. Your numbers would, like, no one would stop listening to you. Your numbers would only go up. You would probably lose a few listeners, but you would gain so many.
Well, you did literally lose a few at that show.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
some are going to die
out.
You've
lost, like, yeah, that's right. You've lost 80 already, but I feel like you get 10, maybe 100 times as many on the back end.
That's right. You make up for it. It's fine. Now it's a good idea. Now we should go on tour.
What about stand-up? Have you done any, like, internet stand-up or anything like that?
I haven't.
Zoom shows? Or?
I've watched it, and it's just weird to me, and I don't – it's not stand-up to me. I mean, I guess if you told the story, that's interesting. I mean, that's not much different than a podcast, but...
Yeah, so you haven't done any stand-up without an audience online.
No.
I would love your opinion on how do you think stand-up is... Do you think it'll change out of this? Like, do you think people will be interested in different things when we, you know, finish this? Is there some sort of things that won't get through the time we're going through, do you think?
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to, I mean, to me, I think we're going to, I think stand-up will be more serious and issue-oriented. I think the casual observational stuff will be, I just think all that stuff's going to be less well-received.
Like the idea of being, well, because I go back and forward on this, because I look at, you know, Jerry Seinfeld's latest special, which was released, you know, pre-pandemic, so, you know, like...
Yeah.
But it's also like it felt very competent, but incredibly dated. You were just like, yeah, you're so angry about all these things. But like, firstly, you're a fucking billionaire. Yes. So like, you're not angry about any of these things. This whole thing is a fucking lie. And then secondly, the things you are angry about are so inconsequential in the, you know, in the world that you're just like, you have these incredible comedic skills, but you are, you know, using them now for nothing that is important. And it felt really old fashioned. And my initial instinct is that stuff will be incredibly old fashioned. Like, you're just like, well, why are you so angry about, like, you know, mobile phones? Like, when, you know, have you looked at the fucking world? Your mobile phones are the best bit of your fucking day. It's fine. But it gets shit after this. Be happy with the fucking phone that you have, mate. Like, but there is another part of me that thinks, well, maybe when we've lived through really dark times, all people will want is fluffy entertainment.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think that in places like Australia, I think that will be true. I don't think that'll be true in America. But I think for countries that aren't going through just a complete fucking hell storm, yeah, I could definitely see that.
It's interesting. It's very interesting to me. I don't know what's going to happen in the world of entertainment. I'm like, do you think we're going to, because I'm also interested in, at the moment, we're massive consumers of entertainment, right? Everybody's watching. Everything that's been made pre-pandemic is now being watched. But we haven't really seen too much of, like, we've seen some things that are pandemic entertainment, like shows that are of the moment and how they've adapted to it, you know, people doing their shows from home or, you know, creating different environment. But we haven't seen what's going to happen in this gap that we're currently having at the moment, which is this, like, where people can't really make things. I think we're going to run out of things.
Yeah, I think we are too. I think we're definitely going to run out of things. I think that we're hit, or people are just going to start watching those really bad movies on Netflix. They're finally going to watch those.
But I feel, I really feel like to the point where, like, it's, you're like, I've finished Netflix. I've watched all of it. Like, every single thing that there is to watch on Netflix, I've fucking watched. I'm watching things again. You know, like, I really do feel like now my entire viewing is completionist. I'm just like, I haven't seen Dirty John. Like, it's not like I have any, like, a position one way or the other on whether it'll be good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just like, I'm checking everything off my fucking list and I haven't seen Dirty John yet. I guess it's now time to watch Dirty John.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what I'm doing. It's just, you're just like, oh, here's this thing that I've had, like, bookmarked for 2 years. I'm like, all right, now I'm going to watch it.
So of those, what have you watched? Anything interesting?
Well, I'm watching Money Heist right now, which is this Spanish heist show on Netflix.
Is it dubbed? Am I right in saying it's dubbed?
No, it's not dubbed. It's in their Spanish language, which I like much better. I don't like dubbed. I watched that. I'm watching what We Do in the Shadows. I hadn't seen that before.
Ah. Television show?
Yeah, so I don't watch comedies. Like, I haven't watched, like, scripted comedies in years. I just don't. I'm just not interested. So it's
Taika Waititi and Jermaine Clement did the original movie, and then Jermaine Clement has adapted it for television for the American version of it.
Yeah, and I'm friends with Ian Morris, who wrote a little bit on it. So that's one of the reasons I watched it. But it's like the first comedy I've watched in, my God, 10 years, maybe more. I didn't even watch Marin. Like, so I'm watching that. That's definitely a sign that I'm getting it to the end of my list of things to watch. I don't know. I haven't watched comedies in 10 years. So I just, it's a sign that I'm at the end of my shows, that I have lined up, that I'm now watching comedies. It's great though. I really fucking like it. It's really funny.
Where are you up to?
I'm halfway through the second season, but then I forgot I was watching it. And then I switched over to Money Heist. And it wasn't like any time went by. Literally, I was watching it one night, and the next night I went back to watch TV, and I just forgot that I was watching a show.
So have you got to the Colin Robertson like episode that's like completely about him and getting a promotion at work?
Yes. That one is awesome. It's so good.
It's one of the best, like, I mean, it's a great payoff of that character. So it, like, I mean, what I love a lot about it was what was started as it felt almost like a one note joke.
Yep.
Like, you know, the idea that they live with an emotional vampire. And I was like, how is this going to sustain? But instead it's been the complete opposite. They didn't go too hard too early.
Yeah.
And then they really found what that character was about. And then like they do this whole episode for people who haven't seen it that is based around this character. And it is just as good a half an hour of like, well, 24 minutes or whatever it is, yeah, of TV comedy as I've watched in a very long time.
Yeah, it really is. It's really, really good. Yeah, that was like, because I thought the same thing. I was like, are they really going to have this character that's so one note? I mean, really, it's one joke and then they just start doing, you know, great things with it. It's really well written. It's really well written. I also watched Bob's Burgers.
Oh, yeah. I've never watched that. Tell me about Bob's Burgers.
It's very funny. I mean, I don't like to, I have a problem watching fiction if I know people who are in it. So there's a lot of people I know that do the voices on that show.
Right.
But I finally, my kid wanted to watch it. So I was like, okay. And then I just got into it. Like, it's really funny. It's a really funny show. It's, you know, it's episodic and he owns a little burger joint and it's got three kids and his wife. And they're also like, I mean, they're so endearing and like, it feels like a real family, but also, you know, they're just a little weird, but it's really good.
I'm finding it weird that there's no South Park on at the moment. Like, I know that, you know, they have, you know, schedules whereby they, you know, obviously only make, you know, a certain amount of shows and they make them at a certain amount of time. But it just feels right now with everything that's going on in the world that I really feel like, what do they have to do better than, they should have just got all of,
yeah,
go on quarantine together. That's basically how you make your show anyway. You all just fucking live together for like 10 weeks and you make this weekly show. Is not right now like the time that we need something like South Park on TV?
Yeah, it's really weird, and especially because that's all that people can make right now is animation. That's all that's being pitched,
right,
and you know, sold. Yeah, it is weird. You would think they would be cranking him out.
Yeah, here's my advice to Hollywood. More South Park. New original ideas.
That's great. I'm sure they heard that. I hope they heard that.
I watched a Netflix documentary the other day about two kids who are good at doing the Rubik's Cube.
Oh my God, my wife just watched it last night. She loved it.
It's so good. It's like incredibly charming. Like this story about this Australian kid who's this like, you know, gun, you know, young fella who's good at the Rubik's Cube. And then this like autistic kid who comes along and, you know, sort of the story about, you know, how the Rubik's Cube sort of, you know, brought out his life in him and then their unlikely friendship. And it's, yeah, it's one of those things where I was like, I don't know if this is the fact that I haven't really, you know, hugged another human being for 4 months and I'm sitting home alone watching this thing. But I'm just really, maybe I want a kid. I wish I had an autistic kid who was good at the Rubik's Cube.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, it's, yeah, that's the place we're all in right now with our brains.
How is, you know, fatherhood during, you know, this current, you know, phase of the world we're in?
I mean, it's fucking rough. Like, they're all stressed out. They, you know, everybody I talk to, their kids are doing different, really weird shit. Yeah, he's totally stressed out. He doesn't sleep. You know, it's hard to get him to go outside and be active. It's a trip. Like, you, particularly his age, like he's in now in the sixth grade, so 11 years old. So he's really supposed to be mixing it up with girls and doing the whole thing. And you know, he's locked in a house a lot of the time. I mean, we go out a little bit, but yeah, it's a fucking shit show for kids.
What does he consume media wise? Like, is he what is a kid his age like predominantly watching and consuming?
Well, he loves The Simpsons, so he's watched every episode like 4 times. He just went through all of Bob's Big Boy, and now he's watching. God damn it! What's his name? Benicio? No, there's a there's a series of cartoons on Netflix that they take place in the same town, but they're different. Like one's aliens, one's trolls, and one. So it's like, but they're not the same. So it'll just be two seasons on the aliens, and then two seasons on the trolls, and then two seasons on the. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I honestly thought for a minute you were like, he's going through a big Benicio del Toro phase. And I was like, what has he got into?
I know, I was going to say.
Benicio del Toro is like
Guillermo del Toro. Guillermo.
Has he done some children's movies, Benicio del Toro? Has he ever appeared in?
Well, he's really into No Country for Old Men. And yeah, so it's Guillermo del Toro. That's why I couldn't remember the name. What a mix-up. He's just into whatever Benicio del Toro's doing. I mean, he's
just finished Escobar, Paradise Lost. Loved it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, my kid, I just can't stop him from watching Sicario. He just, even the sequel.
Oh, shit. God. So, yeah, so he's, it's funny, like, because I really started, the shows that I started him on was SpongeBob when he was younger, a little bit of Phineas and Ferb, and then The Simpsons. So, like, those shows have really good senses of humor, like, smart. Mm-hmm. So, after, like, we finished Bob's Burgers, I was like, all right, let's find another one. And then you just realize how fucking stupid most kids' shows are. Like, they're really dumb. And particularly the comedy in them are horrific. And I would, like, find something that had a good review, and we'd put it on to watch the first episode and get about 10 minutes in. And the jokes are so bad, he's just like, can we turn this off? So I've really sort of created a comedy snob at the age of 11.
Nothing better than an 11-year-old comedy snob, though. Like, I love that's a good thing to have firm opinions about at age 11, I think. That really differentiates you from your other schoolmates when you've got some good, firm comedy positions.
Yeah, so it's good. So now he's at this weird age because if you're a comedy snob, you can watch a lot of stuff, but you're an adult. But he can't watch a lot of the stuff because he's not an adult. So he's in this weird gray area.
What was the first comedy movie that you remember absolutely loving? Can you remember, like, was there one from your sort of youth or childhood or whatever that became the thing that everybody quoted and, you know, was, you know, I don't know, that you identified with?
Well, I mean, I loved Woody Allen, so everybody did not quote Woody Allen movies, but I liked, like, Take the Money and Run. But Caddyshack was the first movie that everybody was into and I was into.
Right. What age were you, like, into Woody Allen?
When I was real young, when I was, like, 10.
Right.
Like a normal kid.
I will not make the unfair joke about that's the age that Woody Allen would have liked you to. So I'll just say that I won't make the joke and still kind of make the joke, I guess.
Thanks.
It's the coward's way. That's how I'll do it.
That's it.
So he's okay. So Caddyshack. Yeah, okay. Oh, that makes sense. For me, it was definitely Bill and Ted's. Bill and Ted's would have been like the iconic film that everybody quoted. And then weirdly enough, at our school, a massive film was Ford Fairlane's Rock and Roll Adventure or whatever, that Andrew Dice Clay movie. Yeah.
My God.
Terrible movie, but was like at our school was like, if you weren't quoting stuff from Ford Fairlane, then you were not in the cool group.
That's so crazy. What a weird movie. Yeah, that's really weird.
Bill and Ted's. What's your Bill and Ted's memory? Because the new movie comes out like next week or whatever. So were you a Bill and Ted's person?
I did. I liked it. I think I only saw it a couple times, but I really liked it. But like I think it's great that they're making a new one. I hope it's really good.
I hope it's really good too. And we only have about a week and a half before we find out. This is about the last time I can hope it's really good. In about a week and a half from now, I'll have the information about whether it was really good or whether it was not really good.
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? I mean, I think Keanu Reeves picks pretty good scripts, it seems like, but he hasn't done a comedy in a long time, so who knows? It's got to be. We need it. We need it.
We do need it, right?
Yeah.
But if it doesn't work, how many people is John Wick going to kill in the next movie? Like, Keanu's just going to be like 500. I'm going to kill 500. I'm still mad about the dog. Haven't even got to the car yet, mate. I've got some anger about the car as well, but this is still fucking dog anger, and this none of this is unspent car anger yet.
It would be so amazing if they just took him and dropped him on an island somewhere, like, I guess New Zealand's too big, but, you know, an island, and he just killed everybody on the island.
Like a Jeffrey Epstein-style pedophile. That's do you it. Mean where everyone on it is like we can all agree they're terrible people, so we don't mind if John yeah. Wick kills everyone on an island. John That's Wick right. on Pedophile Island, like just mowing down Epstein and Clinton, and yeah, like it'd be great.
Wait, Clinton? Not really? Bill Clinton? I hadn't heard that. It's so weird.
George Clinton. Sorry, no.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah, well, Bill Clinton. There's news might not have made America, but it turns out that he and Jeffrey Epstein, as well as the current president of the United States of America, were all quite good buddies.
I don't think that's true. That can't be true.
Well, that they had some things in common.
If that was true, would he be speaking at the Democratic convention?
Well, I mean, like I think the Republicans are having the lady who waved the gun off her front porch. They are. And that kid yeah. who got like abused by the protesters speak at their convention. Yeah. So I guess, you know, you gotta bring some heavyweight game to the table, I suppose.
That's right. Yeah, there was a picture that came out today of Clinton getting massaged by one of the ladies that had been abused by Epstein. That doesn't mean anything. Oh well, okay.
It doesn't mean anything.
It's not great.
Look, I think, okay, when you put it like that, we can all agree it's not great. It doesn't look good. Certainly raises some questions. I think we could all agree it raises some questions.
Yeah. Oh, there's questions raised for sure.
I mean, come on, guys. Prince Andrew was there. Could anything dodgy have been going on if Prince Andrew was there? Keanu just comes up behind Prince Andrew, pops him in the fucking head, double tap. Great movie. John Wick, Pedophile Island.
He just runs around a corner and Kevin Spacey's head is already on a pike.
Yeah, they let Alex Winter be in it. Like, so it's like Bill and Ted's John Wick world. And so, like, John Wick suddenly has this, like, offsider who is also murdering people. And he's just going around putting, like, Kevin Spacey's head on a pike.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's... Yeah, the whole pedophile thing is really an interesting twist to 2020.
Just one of the many things. I mean, it's only August. I
know.
Riddle me this. Has the worst already happened?
No.
Or is the worst yet to come?
The worst is yet to come.
Let's go into Dave Anthony Nostradamus mode. I always like to get a little, you know, what are you seeing coming?
I definitely, things are far worse than I ever thought they would be. You know, we're going to have 30 million people evicted from their houses this month and next month, which is, I don't know if you know anything about history, but that's not great to have that happen. And then...
freeze up some houses. That's what I'm hearing. Yeah. Opportunity for people to move into a new house. I don't know how you spun this in a bad way.
And then I don't know if they're going to give people any more money for like unemployment. Or, I mean, there are definitely a lot of Republicans that refuse to. So if those two things happen, I can't see things just not completely turning into a fucking nightmare.
Well, I mean, at least the riots on your streets have stopped, haven't they? Oh, no, hang on. I think those unemployed and homeless people really will help the riots on the streets. That's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing, how can you riot on a street when it's crowded with 30 million people living on the fucking street?
That's right. Then your people are trying to riot and other people are trying to sleep.
The rioters are going to get shushed by the people sleeping on the footpaths. It's a win-win.
I got to get up at 5. Yeah, it's to the point where I'm just like, I cannot see anything happening except for just sort of a complete collapse, because nothing functions, like nothing works. It's just all failing. And then you're also seeing how everything's built on like a house of cards, like our colleges are paid for just solely by their football teams. And you're like, well, that's not a great idea. So what happens if they stop playing football? Oh, the school closes? Oh, that's, I didn't think of that. And, you know, Uber's going to leave California. So you're going to have all those people who now don't have work. It's just like everything's just sort of folding in upon itself.
Well, what about the election? The election will solve everything. What's going to happen?
I really thought that Biden was going to win. But in the past couple of weeks, watching the polls shift back, I mean, we're back to that place where he has, like Clinton did, he has a lead in the popular vote, but that's not how we choose a president. And so he's starting to lose in all those swing states that Clinton lost. He's now falling behind. And you just watch it and you're like, just fucking say Medicare for all and you'll win. Come on, say it. So I think right now, I think it's a fucking toss-up.
Well, surely... Like if Donald Trump goes into an election with 200,000 dead Americans on his record, there is no way anyone in the world could lose that election.
Have you heard of the Democratic Party? I mean, it's even in my most, you know, least optimistic version of the world, I could not see this happening, but I'm watching it happen. He's also going to, let's face it, he's going to steal a lot of votes.
Well, that's the problem. So you have this idea that I saw somebody make this point, but it was a point that I'd been making privately as we watched the coverage on the news, because we're watching more news. I'm not sure it's necessarily a good thing, but you know, we're watching more news because we're home a lot more, and you put the, you know, CNN or whatever on in the morning to kind of catch up with what's happening in America. And somebody was like, Donald Trump hates the post office. And I was like, no, he doesn't. Donald Trump has no opinion one way or the other about the fucking post office. He's never had an opinion, and he will never have an opinion about the post office. Donald Trump is looking for ways to cheat winning the election. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And the post office is just one of the ways that has been suggested to Donald Trump that he could just keep being president. And he is exploring all options of how he can just keep being president. So the idea that he might just cheat so they win, you've got to be so far in front. It's not enough to just win this one. Like, that's part of the problem, right?
Yeah.
It's not enough to just
that is the problem.
Win it on a technical knockout. You have to knock the fucker out. You have to win by so much that he can't cheat his way out of it.
Right. And that's not going to happen. And because Biden is just, you're just like, I don't know what he is. I don't know what Kamala Harris is. Like, they've had so many positions over their lives that I don't even know what they believe in. So, yeah, that's the big problem. And the real crazy thing is, like, the way our elections are done, each state votes, and then they send the votes to their state legislature, who then sends a delegation to the House of Representatives, and they vote in the House. That's the way it's supposed to work. So the problem is that we have all these crazy Trumpians in states. So we could literally have elections where the state government says Biden won, and then the Republicans in the legislature say no, Trump won, and then they both send that to the House of Representatives. So it's just, it's like a shit show that you could never imagine. because that's how it's a really shitty system, and it's set up. If people don't follow the rules, it falls the fuck apart. So I think that's what's going to happen. I think you're going to get a bunch of states where Republicans fuck with everything and then go, no, our guy won. They were cheating in the mail. They were doing this. They were doing that. Our guy won. And then you're just going to have a contested election. And then what is it?
That's why they should have got you to speak after Michelle Obama at the DNC convention. So two perspectives, guys. We're going to give you a little inspiration, and then we're going to pull the rug out from under you. Look at this. This is what we're doing here now. Our line is a little in and out, and we are an hour later than we expected to be. So,
I'm sorry.
No, it's not your fault. It's the world that we live in. It has been wonderful to speak to you for this. Please, people, listen to The Dollop, but also listen to Dave's other podcast, The West Wing Thing, which, again, I cannot rave enough about how much I enjoy this podcast. It is so super entertaining, and I've been enjoying all the guests that you've had on recently as well. You've had a whole bunch of guests on the show from, you know, various different perspectives, not only to the show, but political perspectives. And it's just a really great show. I think it's excellent.
Yeah. I mean, it's painful to have to watch The West Wing again, but it's fun.
Yeah. See, here's the weird thing. Like, I went through the period of time, we've talked about this before, where I watched it all again and was like, oh God, this is terrible. But now, having listened to the podcast for a couple of seasons, I'm almost like, maybe I should start watching along. Maybe I should, like, you know, Josh and Dave have got to watch these episodes. Maybe I should watch the episodes as well. I feel like I get a greater, you know, like, I think it would be, there's part of me that's just like, yes, some of watching that hour would be painful, but then the anticipation as I'm watching those painful moments to go, oh, I can't wait. I can't, oh, this is horrible. I can't wait. Oh, this is great. You know, like, I'd suddenly be not like, this is terrible. I'd be like, this is great, because Dave and Josh are going to have so much fun with this.
It's so funny. Sometimes I'll tweet just like, Josh, I hate you. And someone will be like, are you, oh, you're watching this episode, aren't you? And I'm like, how did you know that's the episode I'm watching? Yes, that's the one.
All right, mate. Thank you very much for this. I genuinely appreciate it. Can you sign out for the 300th episode, please?
Oh, my God, the 300th. Well, I'm just going to do a classic faux-fover.